I'd like now to welcome Peggy Kelsey. She's author of the book Gathering Strength, Conversations with Afghan Women. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So you will be here this coming Sunday, the 20th of July at 7 o'clock at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation, speaking about this book, which is a book full of portraits, photographs, text of Afghan women. How did you come to do this book in the first place?
Well, it was in the fall of 2002, and a delegation of Afghan women were passing through Austin, Texas, and I attended the reception for them. And if you remember in 2002, if you ever saw any Afghan women in the media, they were these poor, helpless victims that needed saving. But the women I met were so different from that. They were so much like you or me, and because there were 14, there was a variety of them. And so because I'm a professional photographer and because I've spent time in the Middle East, it just occurred to me that I should go to Afghanistan and bring back a more comprehensive view of the women and their situation. So I put together the Afghan Women's Project, and in the fall of 2003, I went over there.
Were all the photographs and stories that you collected from that one trip?
No, I went in 2003 and then again in 2010. So it's a combination of those trips.
It's such an interesting book because these women, I mean, you've got a defense attorney, you've got businesswomen, you've got directors of organizations, you've got teachers, you've got women who are studying Taekwondo, and they really paint a different picture than, as you say, the one we hear in the media, which is basically a picture of oppression, women having to stay home, and fear, and all these things, which I'm sure do exist, but there is a sense that there is a civil life that women are, to at least some extent, really participating in.
Yes, and the book also does contain some of those stories of women who are repressed and who are having really difficult times. And the thing is the point I really want to make is that it's a diversity of women. And so there are many who do participate quite fully in society, who have very supportive husbands, who encourage them in their work. And then, of course, there are situations that are the opposite of that as well. But the media covers the depressing stories, and so I wanted to bring to light the more hopeful stories and the stories that can give people insights into ways or solutions for hope or opportunities for hope and progression.
Yeah, for example, there's one young woman who was an athlete, and you look at her picture and she looks like she could be any athlete from almost anywhere in the world who was really into basketball. And I think you asked her the question something like, what would you like Western people to know? And she said, to support exchange programs and athletic teams. And these are things, I mean, the very idea that there are Afghan athletic teams to support is something that certainly I had never even thought of.
It's that. And also, I personally, and I think a lot of people, tend to dismiss stuff like that as not important when there are so many very critical issues going on, like health care and women's rights and things like that. And I came to learn that these kinds of programs, sports programs and programs aimed at children and helping them to, like, Skateistan, helping them to skateboard and just have normal childhood lives, as we would see that in America, that's very important as well. I mean, Maihan, the captain of the basketball team, told me that the most important thing she learned was unity, because for a team to win, they have to be unified. And for the country to succeed, it has to be unified as well.
The book, for me, painted a picture of what is really true everywhere, which is that you've got leaders and you've got government and they get the publicity, but really society is made up of lots of different people where there are much smaller and less visible leaders doing things in small communities, whether that community is a block or a gym or a women's center or whatever. And it is those people who make up the threads of the fabric of society. And it's important to talk about them.
Yes, that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, to help people understand that.
So how did you find the women whom you interviewed and photographed?
I had a variety of different ways. Sometimes I would say to number one, I had a number of different translators, and the translators were from different ethnic groups, and so that I could get, so that my filter could be varied. And then sometimes I asked the translator, you know, do you want to earn extra money? Introduce me to people that you know. And so I got introduced to, like, a translator's maid's neighbors, for example. I met people just through my own networking. I met people because the second trip that I made, I went with Global Exchange, which creates what they call these reality tours. And I knew that I would meet people I would not meet otherwise, like some of the parliamentarians or Arsalan Rahmani, who was the ex-Taliban minister of education. Never would have met him without Global Exchange. And so it was just a variety of ways that I met them, because I really wanted to have a lot of diversity in the book. And so I tried every way I could to get that.
Had the women whom you met all had experiences of war and violence?
No, not all of them, because some of them left the country when they were very young. And so their experience was that of an exile. And some of those women had good opportunities for education and for mingling between the sexes, for activism. And when they went back to Afghanistan to find their roots and to serve the society and help the country rebuild, they brought back a whole different mindset from the people who stayed there and endured all those wars.
That's such an interesting section of the book, because there's, for example, a really lovely young woman who had spent many years in Iran, and she talks about how westernized Iran was. And she, when you met her, you thought that she actually had grown up in the United States, even though she'd only lived there for 2 years. And going back from Iran to Afghanistan was really culture shock.
Yes. Yes, it was culture shock for most of the women who came back. And in part also because they expected to be welcomed back with open arms, and mostly they were not, because the people who had suffered through the wars, and, you know, they came close to starvation, they had bombs dropping around them, they viewed people who left as having the easy life, whereas those who left, they struggled as well, and they struggled in different ways than those who stayed. But that was an eye-opening thing, and it brought them to a personal observance that they are more than Afghan, they are world citizens very often.
Yeah, and it's another thing that was interesting about that was one of them, I think it was the same one, had gotten, I believe, an engineering degree, and she was working for a foreign non-government organization, and the workplace discrimination that she encountered was not from Afghan men, but from Americans, from white Western men.
I know. I was shocked when I heard that.
It's funny. I wasn't shocked. But, I mean, and again, these are the things, you know, you read through this book and you just get these little pictures and snapshots that bust stereotypes.
Yes. Yes. That's another one of the reasons I wrote the book, because there are so many, and especially about the openness of society to change and the openness of people to change. We kind of have this vision in the West that Afghan men are like this and take it or leave it. And when in reality, if you can approach them in a reasonable way and address their deeper concerns, very often they can see things from your point of view and allow their daughters to go out working, or, you know, allow these things that they might have been against before.
What kinds of responses did you get when you asked about, and I think you asked quite a number of different people, about paths toward peace and social change in Afghanistan?
Well, I got different opinions on that. And some people, you know, because really, if there is to be peace, you have to bring in all the different factions of society. And that means all the different ethnic groups must be included on a kind of equal representational basis. You have to have representation from the Taliban and from other power brokers throughout the country. And the Taliban was such a horrific period that a lot of women just didn't want them anywhere near the government because they'd lived through it before when the Taliban were in charge. And other people thought that you can't have peace without including them, and so we need to, and we just need to invite them into the government, but also stand up for our rights with them, because it would be a pluralistic kind of government.
What kinds of responses did you get when you asked about people's attitudes toward the United States?
Well, you know, it differed from 2003 to 2010. In 2003, when I would ask, what do you think, or what would you say to George Bush if you could have lunch with him? And overwhelmingly, they said, thank you for driving out the Taliban. And I said, yeah, but a lot of people were killed in that process. And they said, never mind. We are just so appreciative. Now, you have to keep in mind that the women who said that were urban women, and they were not near Tora Bora, where the actual fighting took place. They were not in Helmand, where that fighting took place. So, and everybody was very polite and just very appreciative, and they didn't believe that the U.S. was doing an occupation. We just came to get rid of the Taliban. In 2010, people were discouraged, and they had all these really, really high hopes, and many of them had not come to fruition. I mean, there have been a lot of positive changes, especially in the urban areas, but not to the degree that people were expecting. And so in 2010, while I was always treated respectfully, people were much more critical of the United States government. And they were especially disappointed that we fought the war in Iraq, because they saw that as a distraction from rebuilding Afghanistan.
We're talking to Peggy Kelsey about her book, Gathering Strength, Conversations with Afghan Women. One of the stories that I've been watching over the years in Afghanistan is the incredible waste of money and failed projects and overly expensive projects that are going on in the name of aid and rebuilding and so on. What did you see firsthand? Did you see any effective projects? Did you see some of these ones that weren't so good?
I saw a number of effective projects, and I've heard about ones that were not so good. The most effective projects worked closely with the Afghans. They did not come in and say, this is what you need, this is how we can help you, and this is what we're going to do. Instead, they asked the Afghans what they want. They also were very savvy about who the local people were that they worked with, because in many cases, they would go into a village or an area, and they would find the most powerful person and ask the most powerful person what they wanted, which could be very different from what was actually best for the society or whatever, you know. There were a lot of programs. They hired people from within. They really focused on training Afghans to eventually take over the process. Some of the most effective educational programs focused on teacher training. It's one thing to build schools. It's great to build schools, and they are very badly needed and very badly wanted. But the old teaching methods are really mostly about rote memorization, accepting everything you're told, and if you're not learning fast enough, then we beat you. So modern teaching methods can make a huge effect in giving people critical thinking skills, as well as, more encouragement rather than punishment. And I would say one more thing about being effective. There are the way that American society works, and a lot of the aid programs work, is that it's all based on budget cycles. It's based on election cycles. And these organizations have to prove that they did something, that they spent all their money, and that they have something that they can show in a visible way. And very often, that is not the most sustainable way to run a program. And if things can be thought of and developed with the long term in mind, long term meaning 20 years or 50 years, then those programs have a much better rate of success in the long run.
Under the Taliban, as you've talked about in the book, it was really hard for girls to get an education, and there was a group called the Revolutionary Association of Afghan Women that was doing underground schools. What is the state of girls' education in Afghanistan now, or what did you see on your second trip there?
Well, many, many girls and boys are being educated. And it's and while it's, you know, we, our focus is on educating girls, it's very, very important to educate both of them. And education programs that are coming through aid organizations have an agenda with them. I mean, every education has agendas. But through the aid organizations, they have an agenda of gender equality and, you know, working together and that kind of thing, which is very badly needed, and it's a very good prospect of it. Now, the majority of Afghanistan is rural, and the rural areas are not, you know, like little farming communities necessarily, but the country is very mountainous, and all of the villages lie on these little tiny mountain streams that are supplied by snowmelt. And so the villages are extremely long. I mean, like it might be a long, continuous sort of village. So it's really hard to bring in aid programs because you can't serve that many people within walking distance. So that's just one of the challenges for both health programs and educational programs. And working with the rural areas is vitally important for the long-term stability of the country.
Were you able to get out into the rural areas to do your interviews and photographs?
I did some in the area of Bandi Amir National Park, and that national park encompasses seven different villages. And I stayed in one and kind of got to see some of that firsthand.
Were the women, especially in those areas that were not urban, were they willing to be photographed and tell their stories?
Yes. You know, one thing that really surprised me, especially on my first trip, because I had no idea, was, you know, will women talk to me? Will they allow themselves to be photographed? Because very often in Islamic society, photography is looked down upon. But what I discovered was that the women's desire and need to tell their story was very, very important to them. And I had several instances where it was really brought home, where I did two interviews at a literacy program. And when I came out of the interview room, there were 15 women lined up because they wanted to tell their stories. I had another interview in 2007 where it was in the translator's maid's neighborhood, and I told her that I need to be able to photograph because it has to do with the photo exhibits that I have developed after I got back. And so when I pulled out my camera, the woman said, "Oh, no, I can't be photographed." And I just said, "Well, you know, I'm real sorry then. I can only give you the short interview, not the more in-depth one." And she sent out her children right away to get permission from her husband to be photographed because she really, really wanted to. And this whole thing of bearing witness to stories I really got how important that is to people, especially to poorer people, poorer people who, you know, they have somebody come all the way from America to hear their story, and that what a profound effect that has on them personally.
The book is in English. Did they have access to it, the different women whom you interviewed?
Some of the women do. I'm in contact with some of them by email, of course, the educated ones, and so I've told them about the book. If they're in it, I've given them a copy. But you can't really mail things to Afghanistan very easily, you know, just through the regular postal system. So women that aren't here in the States or haven't come to the States for education haven't gotten to see that book. And it's more intended for Western audiences. This book is about educating people over here about Afghanistan.
Now, there's a whole section called Women's Rights, and in that you have a defense attorney, an engineer, a member of parliament, somebody involved in community development. How did these women, most of whom look like they're middle-aged or older, work to get in the positions that they're in a country where that's not the norm?
Well, because when they started, it was more of the norm. It was in 1974, there was a king of Afghanistan, and then, I mean, he was way before that also, but his government was overthrown by his cousin, Daoud, who was a communist. And the communists really encouraged women's participation in society, women attending universities, and all of that sort of thing. And so those women were active during that time. And then those who stayed in the country were active during the civil war, subsequent civil war, when the Soviets left, and then secretly during the Taliban.
And so it's funny, because we sort of forget when we have this notion of progress, although I suppose in this country progress seems like a hope rather than a reality in many ways, but you don't always think about how many steps backwards a society can take after having achieved some level of, for example, equality.
I know, we don't think about that, but it's been somewhat true here. The thing is that there's a continuum of repression and progressiveness, and maybe those aren't the best words, but societies, just as a pendulum, they swing back and forth between those two poles. And our society does it, Afghan society certainly does it, and so the way you can take heart is that when it flows toward conservatism and repression, you know, that'll go for a while, and then it will come back, and society will open up again. And it'll get to a point where people can't accept it, and then it'll swing back in the other way.
We're talking to Peggy Kelsey about her book, Gathering Strength, Conversations with Afghan Women. Now, one thing that you did was visit a prison and listen to women's stories there. And one of the things that was kind of bizarre about that chapter was you weren't really sure whether their stories were true or not.
Well, you know, I mean, and after talking with people here about prisoners and everything, they told me that you really can't necessarily trust stories from prisoners, period, that everybody's innocent kind of thing. And so, you know, I had to keep that with a grain of salt. And plus, I would say the vast majority of women prisoners and a very large percentage of the Afghan population has PTSD from all of the things that they've experienced. And so that kind of changes things as well. And when I went into the prison the first time, I tagged along with an aid group, and I asked some questions, and those women said that, yes, a lot of them have mental issues. So the combination of all of those things, and plus trying, you know, it's like their agenda. What do they want me to think? Or, you know, see, I reported what I heard, but you can't necessarily trust it 100%.
What did you see in the prisons? What were the conditions like?
Well, the prison building was built in 1936, and when I walked in initially and walked down the hall, it was primitive. It was medieval. Rough stone walls, a bare light bulb, which I guess is beyond medieval, but dimly lit and, you know, kind of horrible. But then we opened the doors into the women's rooms, and they had been newly refurbished. They were bright. There were beds. The walls were freshly plastered and painted. And the women are not locked in their rooms. They're locked in the building. So they can walk around. They can visit each other. They can go in the courtyard where they do their own laundry, and they get water to cook their own food. And so it's like they have this giant household almost that they live in, and a little prison society.
And I think, if I recall correctly, at least one of them was taking care of her young children there.
Yes, and that's something that happened in 2003. And at that time, normally when a woman goes to prison, her kids would go live with her family, her husband's family, or if that wasn't available, with her own family. But because of all the refugees returning from different parts of the country, and because families had become so separated, I mean, like extended families had become separated, when women went to prison, there was no family there for the kids to go to. And so kids below a certain age, which was like 9 or 10, they would go into prison with the mothers. Now, since that time, there's been a new prison for women built called Badam Bagh, and that an organization, Women for Afghan Women, has built an orphanage for the children of prisoners. And then the children can live in that orphanage. They go to school within that orphanage. because if they went to the main school, then there would be social problems because, you know, who are you? Where's your family? Oh, it's in prison. You know, that would cause a lot of problems. And the kids also have issues related to their parents being incarcerated. So they have their own place now, and so the situation for them is much better.
There's a place in the book where you say something like, in the United States, if I want to write to somebody or call somebody, I call them or write to them and state my business, and we conduct ourselves in a straightforward way. Whereas here, you have to go through kind of a set of rituals and preliminaries before you get down to business. What was your own experience of that? I think Westerners may or Americans may say, what a waste of time, but I don't think it's as easy as that.
You're right. The thing is that, and it's here too, but I don't think we see it in quite the same way. But in Afghanistan, everything is dependent on relationships, and people do things to build relationships or to cause people to be indebted to them and that kind of thing. And so, caring and expressing an interest in people's families is very, very important. And so as I would talk to Afghans, if I'd call them up on the phone, I had to stop myself and do that little preliminary, how are you, how's your family, and, you know, et cetera. And it got to be where it was more habitual. And so it just makes you kind of take a pause and catch your breath before delving into the main thing you wanted to talk about.
I think it also, as you say, highlights the reality that everything works on relationships, and that's the case here too. We're just not as cognizant of it necessarily, and maybe not as gracious about it.
Not as gracious about it. That really describes it, I think. And yes, we do build relationships, but it's kind of in a more direct way of, you know, okay, so, you know, we know each other and we can call on each other, perhaps, without even delving into our personal lives as much, though that helps as well. And we could learn from Afghans in that way, actually.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. After having done this, and you tell a lovely story in the beginning of the book about being an American and who'd never even considered going outside the borders of the United States, and then suddenly you went to some kind of exchange program in Iran and went to Iran and India and Afghanistan, and your whole life changed. And that is, I think, the story of so many people when they have their first experience, Americans, when they have their first experience of foreign travel. It really changes you. How did spending time in Afghanistan and doing this book affect you personally?
The process of putting together the project and, you know, lecturing about it and everything, just, it made me grow in ways that I had never anticipated. I mean, just by having to make cold calls, I finally got comfortable with doing that. I never would have considered writing a book before, but then once I was on the last day of my second trip, that I just realized that that was something I needed to do. And so I set about doing it. And, you know, reflecting back, because it's been over 10 years that I've been working on this, that when I initially decided to go to Afghanistan, if I had known that, you know, in the future you're going to be speaking to these high-level people, you're going to be writing books, you're going to be traveling, you're going to be on this book tour, I might not have done it because I might have been so intimidated. But right, step by step by step, I grew into it. And that's like a big message for people that I like to give. It's like, go ahead and take those first steps because, you know, you'll grow into what you need to be to do what you need to do.
After doing this book, how do you see United States media stories about Afghanistan?
Well, you know, there are good stories, and I'm always like perusing the news to see it. And one thing I notice is that a lot of the news really has an agenda tied to it. And I've tried very, very hard to keep that away from my book. I mean, the agenda for my book is support Afghan women. But I've really, really gone through it very carefully to try to make sure there's no political agenda or judgments about the U.S. government and what it's doing or anything, because I think I want to leave that for people to decide on their own. And they, through the stories of Afghan women, without, you know, that they're telling their realities, and sometimes their realities contradict with other Afghan women, which is, it would here in America, too, if we were asking about American women. So I just wanted to make it unbiased and let people reach their own conclusions about it.
Peggy Kelsey is author of the book Gathering Strength, Conversations with Afghan Women. She will be at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation on Barcelona Road this Sunday, the 20th of July, at 7 o'clock in the evening. I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to coming to Santa Fe.
Excellent. We look forward to having you. And you can find out more information at Kelsey's, K-E-L-S-E-Y-S.net.